Welcome to Higher Calling Wildlife with award-winning wildlife journalist Chester Moore. From deep investigations to interviews with top experts, Higher Calling Wildlife is the place to get informed and inspired about all things wildlife.
And I'm really excited about today's guest. We've had him on before about a year ago, but the work this man and the organization he represents does is absolutely incredible. If you listen to this program, you know I'm all about wildlife conservation, and you know I love dogs. I'm always talking about my Bullmaster for my Doberman. Love dogs, and I love working dogs. So on the line right now, we have Mr. Pete Coppolillo. He is the Executive Director for Working Dogs for Conservation. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Working Dogs for Conservation, man, that's a mouthful. So explain to us out there who are maybe not real familiar with this, what Working Dogs for Conservation is all about.
Yeah, well, the short answer is that that we train dogs to do conservation work, however and wherever we can. And we take them all over the world to do it. You know, the longer answer is that in the early days of our field and our organization, it was primarily detection work, and primarily ecological work, finding scats. You know, the big development that really led to this field was when it became possible to get DNA from fecal material and scats. And so at that point, everybody, you know, there was a good reason to find all the scats that you could, whether you were looking for grizzly bears or wolverines or wolves or African wild dogs or Siberian tigers. So we started using dogs to do that. And I say we, the broader collective conservation we. Sure. I didn't join the organization until 2012, but it was founded by four women, all from here in Montana, working on wildlife and figuring out, you know, better, less invasive, less expensive, safer ways to find out about wildlife and protect them.
Yeah, and I think that's a really, really important thing is about the way to find out about wildlife. I mean, these dogs are actually out there maybe in the middle of, you know, Siberia somewhere, but because of the genetics, they can get out a scat, for example, use their nose to find it, maybe find even subpopulations of endangered animals like the Siberian or Amur tiger that people didn't know existed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, back in the day, you know, we were happy and impressed when we could identify a scat to species. Mm-hmm. And nowadays we can not only identify it to species, but we can tell you if it's a male or female. We can identify it as an individual, so we can know how many different individuals the scats that we collect came from. And we can even do things like pedigree and know who that individual is related to. So, you know, for example, if you give us a bear scat, a dog finds a bear scat in an unlikely location, we can tell you whether that's a Northern Continental Divide grizzly bear or a Yellowstone grizzly bear, for example.
Wow, that's pretty impressive there.
It's great.
But you pair that technology now with the old school technology of a dog's nose. I mean, kind of almost going back to basics, but refining what that dog is built for.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is amazing. And, you know, it's a cool combination, you know, that we've been living with these canids for 40,000 years and co-evolved with them. You know, dogs' morphology is different. They've got muscles that wolves don't have in their eyes to communicate with us. You know, it's very cool. And, you know, I say it all the time. People love to hear about how sensitive and amazing dogs' noses are, and they really are. But the truth is, the really extraordinary thing about a dog, the thing that enables us to do this work with them, is not necessarily their nose. Lots of species have amazing noses. What's amazing about a dog is their relationship to us and that their desire to be around us and to work with us and to communicate with us and to work through all those, we go through these ham-handed ways of asking them questions and they figure it out and they work with us on it and get the job done in spite of how how poorly we speak dog.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you guys are speaking a really bad Doberman dialect here today. But one of the things I found interesting when I first met with you guys through our mutual friends at the Wild Sheep Foundation was that you're not necessarily using like a specialist breed. You guys are using like rescue dogs.
Yep, that's right. We actually select for their behavior. Mm-hmm. And behavioral characteristics. And really, it's oversimplification a little bit, but what we really look for is crazy ball drive mm-hmm. or toy drive, you know? And that's because this job is really just a game for them. Mm-hmm. You know, basically the crux of what we do is they figure out they're excited to play their game. You know, whether mm-hmm. it's fetch or tug or whatever, and we create a game where if you find the target odor or mm-hmm. track the poacher or do discrimination, we'll get into the discrimination stuff a little later, but mm-hmm. you know, you do the thing that I'm asking you for and we get to play the game, and mm-hmm. and you know, that's not unique to any particular breed, and you know, we're relatively small. I mean, in the conservation world, we're big for a conservation dog organization. Mm-hmm. But, you know, relative to other working dog organizations like the U.S. military or Customs and Border Protection, we're tiny. And so even we just can't, we're not an important customer when it comes to buying, you know, these high end fancy bred dogs from Europe. So mm-hmm. even if we wanted to, we really, you know, those folks don't return my phone calls, no matter what. And so, you know, around 9/11, after 9/11, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, there was a global shortage in detection dogs, mm-hmm. These specialty bred detection dogs, and the price for them went up to $25,000-$50,000. So we just didn't have that kind of money back in the day, and. Mm-hmm. And those huge prices also drove a lot of disreputable breeders into the market. So pretty much, you know, everybody in Eastern Europe who could get their hands on shepherds or mals were breeding them. And what we saw is a resurgence of a lot of bad stuff like hip dysplasia and elbow dysplasia, you know, mm-hmm. congenital genetic problems and all that. And like I said, we don't have access to the reputable high-end breeders. And we're not going to do business with the disreputable ones. So mm-hmm. it just made perfect sense. And it fit philosophically with a lot of the early dogs were rescued anyway. So it all fit and it all came together and we've doubled down. And I never say never, you know, there are great dogs that are rescued. But, you know, there are also certain circumstances where it makes a lot more sense. Like, for example, with a green handler, where you really need to know a dog's early history and all that. So I don't want to throw shade on the people who buy bred dogs. There are great bred dogs. There are lots of good reasons to do it because you know their history. You can mm-hmm. shape them from the very beginning. And that's really a powerful thing. And people do amazing things that way. But for us, you know, primarily our go-to is to rescue them.
No, that makes perfect. I want to get that out there because I think that's a really cool part of what you do. And also the fact that the ability to smell out these things isn't necessarily just a trait of like a Belgian Malinois or a bloodhound or whatever it happens to be. Yep. So just real quick, give me just an overview of some of the breeds that are out there working for you guys right now.
Well, I'm proud to say that the most common breed in our kennel is a mutt.
A mutt. There we go. Mutts.
Yeah. We take mixed breeds and, but we've got shepherds, we've got mals, we've got a lot of labs. We've got at least one German short hair. You know, and people, you know, dog people are all funny, and I include myself in that. You know, the bloodhound people will say bloodhounds' noses are this much better than everybody else's, and you know, a lot of people, police and military folks, are really believe in their mals and shepherds, and they want them. You know, they say, hey, you know, a bloodhound this might be predisposed to ground scent or, you know, a certain way of searching. I want a dog that's going to use all the tools in front of them. You know, the truth is every single one of these dogs is incredibly talented. Even your, you know, your little lap dogs and dogs that we don't think of working dogs have this ability. What's really exceptional that we look for and is that drive to mm-hmm. work, the persistence, you know, to mm-hmm. to not only just want to play with the ball, but like to look for it for 5, 10, 15 minutes, maybe all day long. You know, it's those characteristics that really drive them. And, you know, people talk about the brachycephalic ones, you know, like your mastiff or pugs or any of those that may have some compromised olfactory ability. The truth is, you know, I don't think we go anywhere close to the lower end of what dogs are capable of. This is the olfaction part of it is very easy for them. They are so good at this that, you know, I think virtually all dogs are capable of doing the work.
This season is brought to you by BAC Shows. Go to bacshows.com for information on great boat, sport, and RV shows in East Texas and Louisiana. And don't forget, Higher Calling Wildlife is brought to you by Texas Fishing Game. Go to fishgame.com to connect.
Thanks for listening to Higher Calling Wildlife. Find us on Facebook at Higher Calling Wildlife, at The Chester Moore on Instagram, and our blog at higher calling.net. To contact Chester, email chester@chestermoore.com.